If God said he would uphold you and lend you strength and courage, what would you be willing to try? Do you think that God might be calling your name to something bigger? Let's explore what God promises and what we can expect from God as we begin to think about what might be next in our faith journey at WordServe. Welcome to the May 19th edition of the Community Group Leaders Preparation Guide. And the last session of the spring session. Can you believe this? Summer awaits us, but we're not going to be idle. We've got a plan, and we'll talk more about that. Don't forget the end of semester critiques. Sent that out on an email with a link. If you're having any problems with that, let me know. Again, I would like to have all the results back no later than Sunday, May 26th, so that I can get them processed and get the results back to you. You will also notice on your leader's guide this week, as well as in the study guides that are passed out to everyone in the program, there's a QR code. If you have a smartphone that can snap that little QR code, it will take people directly to the sign-up form for Servant Recruitment. Hey, how slick is that? Takes away any excuse for, oh, I couldn't find it, I didn't know how to get there. So why do I do this? Why do I include it? Because I wanted to get it into everybody's hands, because our results are a little bit less than desired at this point. We're trying to commit people to serve from August 2013 to July 2014. And the sooner we nail down those teams, the sooner we can move on to bigger and better things. So I encourage people to snap the QR code or just go to our website at www.wordserve.org and sign up for a team for 1 year. Again, if everybody does a little, nobody does it all. And that's what we're about. It'll only take a second to complete that form, literally less than a minute. All right, what are we about today? The lesson is basically all about ending well. And by that, we're going to try and do a couple of things. We're going to have just come off of Senior Sunday. That's graduating seniors in high school, not over 65. We're going to have Emily Motley preach on Sunday. You will have heard her preach a great testimony of how God has called her and used her in her current setting, and I'm sure there are bigger and better things ahead. But it's going to raise some questions. What is God calling us to do? What is next in our faith walk? And can we, are we willing to allow God's will to become our will so we can accomplish far greater things? So this lesson really has the objective of setting up the summer for a time of reflection and growth for us. And I include three steps in the study guide. If you have it with you and want to pull it out, we'll just walk through this together. The three steps I'm looking for to end well are to encourage people to pursue the taking it home section. I'll talk more about that in a second. It's going to be a summer-long reflection and growth time. Also want to talk to your groups about how to stay in touch if you need to or want to over the summer. Passing phone numbers, agreeing to meet occasionally for lunch are options. There's also a note in the community group's leader study guide about a website, www.thywillbedone.org. It's a way for you to share prayer requests. You can choose who sees what level of your prayer request according to category. It's a pretty cool website. I checked it out. Sean Ramsey referred it to me as a friend of his, so it's really some good stuff. You might check out www.thywillbedone.org. All right, there's another note on your community group leader study guide that I will cover in more detail later. The third step, though, to end well on this particular session is to take some proactive steps to shape what your group might look like next fall. In other words, this is a time to start talking to people about committing to leadership in terms of guiding or hosting, in terms of who they may invite, in terms of who they may be praying for all summer long, to see if we can get people interested in attending groups. Also, an opportunity, if you see a need crop up and you want to do something over the summer, you would like to facilitate an independent study or just get a group of people together to pray or something like that, listen, you don't need my permission to do that. Feel free to gather a group of people. If you would like help resourcing that or ideas, or if you've got something going this summer and you run into a snag, I just need some help, by all means, call me. Hey, it's what I do. So feel free to do that over the summer. If you want ideas, suggestions, help, or coaching, I'd be more than happy to do whatever I can to help you succeed. All right, into the meat of the digging deeper section. This text is really interesting. This text was chosen by Emily for her sermon. And what makes it interesting for me is that this is about God's promises to his people Israel. And what makes it even more interesting is, although we tend to look at it in terms of a modern light, here God will help us, he will give us strength and courage. Consider the time that this is written. Isaiah is one of the most fascinating prophets to me of the Old Testament because he goes all the way from before Israel was overrun to the full-blown exile. And as he writes these words in Isaiah 41, 8 through 13, the people called Israel are actually in Babylonian captivity. They've been overrun, the kingdom has been destroyed, they've been carted off, life is not good. And that's when these words are written. And the words say things like, I will not forget you, I will not cast you away, I will strengthen you, I will uphold you. All these promises that God gives to an Israel that's in captivity is proof positive that God is not done. He is not going to give up until his plan comes to fruition. So the text is kind of interesting in that I ask, what do you think God's expectations were for Israel right there in question number one? This particular text may or may not lend itself to a good talk about what God's expectations for Israel were. You might have to draw on some of your other Bible knowledge or extra biblical knowledge about what God's chosen people means. But basically, in a nutshell, God's chosen people were chosen to be a light to all the other nations. They were to live in such a way that it would point others to God. And it's interesting to note that while this is written to fallen Israel in exile, God still clings to that plan. Even though the people have disappointed him, even though they did not follow God, they did not live up to their billing to be a light to all the nations, God still lives up to his end of the bargain. So when we talk expectations, you might have to broaden the scope of this question a little bit just to generate good discussion. The second question there, do you think Israel had a right to expect things from God, and why or why not? And if you answer yes to that, the next question says, name some of those things that you think we have, or Israel has a right to expect from God. From a facilitation standpoint, I want to caution you against the Sunday school answer. People will say, well, certainly we can expect things from God. We can ask for strength. We can ask for peace. But dig a little deeper and see if you can't get behind some of the motives and maybe even a look at human nature versus God's nature. It sounds really ominous when I say it that way, but here's what I mean. For example, should we expect God's help if we're going to pursue immoral goals? Or maybe not so dramatic, should we expect God's help with a selfish goal? I highlight James 4:3 in the Leader's Guide. It says this, even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You only want what will give you pleasure. That's an example of a selfish motive, and that's an example of James telling us that when you pray and are asking for things out of a selfish motive, you don't get it because your motives are wrong. So, as the discussion unfolds, you might bring up the possibility that we can't expect just anything from God. We can't expect a God who is loving and just to help us perpetrate evil, for example. That's not reasonable. Nor should we expect God to be totally self-serving to us, give us whatever we want. God is not the genie in the bottle. You know, we don't rub the lamp and he grants every wish. So there are conditions for how God helps. And trust me, it's for our own good. So as you get into this discussion of maybe asking with wrong motives, a possible follow-on question would be, well, then what would God be pleased to help us with? And if you get a chance to get into that vein of conversation, remember there is a word-served life mark called understanding God's pleasure. That's why that's so important. If we understand what God's pleasure is, we understand how to align ourselves with His purposes. And if we're aligned with God's purposes, the help that comes from God will make a huge difference. We'll get what we ask for if we're aligned with God. All right, the second phase in the academic portion is under promise. I stray a little bit away from the text and try and personalize this just a little bit. We start right in the passage. What does God promise in this passage? The reason I'm taking these lines of questions is so that we're not setting up the right answer. God promises in the passage, you'll be able to see the promises, things like God's help, God's presence, where He says He will not leave, He will not throw His people away, God's victory. We'll also see God's comfort and support when, as He says things like, don't fear, don't be discouraged. So that's a pretty easy gimme question to just pick things literally right out of the text. The next two questions are truly designed to have no right answer. So in other words, anybody can throw anything out and it's okay. It generates discussion. Here's what I mean. What promise means the most to you and why? Well, there's no wrong answer. Which one of those means most to you is a personal opinion. Or maybe it's a result of a life circumstance where you saw this lived out. There's a great opportunity here to get a little backstory on people, to hear people's both struggles in that third question and triumphs and what means most to them. It also helps you know where they are and what's on their mind. That word in the third question, struggle, it was kind of an interesting word choice. I actually edited it out twice and ended up bringing it back. Third time's a charm. Because struggle, to me, is a great word. It really helps people identify what's going on in their lives. Struggle insinuates that there's something deeper going on. Why would they promise? Or why would they struggle with God's promises? Well, maybe they don't see that in their own lives. Or maybe they can't see how God has done that in the past. Or maybe they just think that that doesn't apply anymore. God did it for a specific group of people in a specific time, but no more. Or maybe there's something else that they're struggling with. Great opportunity, again, to hear a little bit of backstory, but also begin to open people up to how you might help them grow by pointing them towards resources or people or prayers or whatever it is that they need to grow stronger in that struggle and not be defeated by that struggle. All right, into number three is the life application phase. This is really just my way of trying to get in a peek under the hood of what people's hopes and dreams are, especially when it comes to their relationship with God. If God were to strengthen you, what would you use that strength for? Really points to what your hopes and dreams are. And the second question is more on the overcoming the negative side. You know, the first is very positive. You get strength, what we use it for. The second is overcoming the negative. What's holding you back? If every chance of failure was taken away, what would you do? What would you boldly try that you haven't tried before? So it's just a chance to see where people are, what they're struggling with, what they're dreaming about. And as you get into some of these discussions, that motive issue may reappear. In other words, if you're asking God to strengthen you to do something that's pretty selfish, I could see that discussion coming back around. Or if God said you wouldn't fail on something that's immoral, I could see that coming back up. So as you approach this discussion, be aware that there could be some very personal information or some very personal motives being exposed here. It could be a very sensitive point. So I want to offer three tools to help you get past the awkwardness of that individual vulnerability and exposure. The first tool that we have, if we're going to talk about people's feelings, is that covenant that you signed early on, your pledge to one another that you would do no harm to each other, that you would be loving to each other. The second is a questioning approach. And by that I mean in an instructional situation, especially a sensitive one like this, I think it goes far better to say, to ask questions rather than to say, oh, well, that's an immoral motive. Does it take longer? Yes, it takes longer to ask questions because people process. So why do it? Because if I ask questions and they arrive at the answer and recognize that they may be asking out of an improper motive, then it means more to them, they're more open to it, and I'm not the bad guy. So that is a win-win, I think, for everybody. So how would you use a questioning approach? If someone voices an obstacle or a fear, well, what do you think is in your way, or why do you think that is in your way? And if they happen to mention that their motives may not be right, just keep questioning back to them. What makes you say that? Why do you feel that? I mean, you voiced it, so do you have some experience that makes you think that this hasn't worked out? Those kinds of things. And let them talk their way through it. Give them then the chance to work through this. And I think you'll get a much better result, both in the short term, because it's not a highly emotional discussion. It's not a heated discussion. And then in the long term, because they feel like they've pieced this answer together, then they'll own it and they'll do something about it. The last tool that I offer there, if it becomes necessary to talk about very sensitive information, is just to offer to take that conversation offline. If you feel that something needs to be said more directly to someone, in other words, this is a time to speak the truth in love, you might just leave the conversation there and say, hey, can we talk later? And just meet with them either one-on-one, or maybe take another trusted person with you and just say, hey, this is how we feel. This is what we've noticed. We've seen these results. We see that it doesn't make you happy and that you're struggling. We just offer this and then offer ourselves any way that we can to help you. So those are three tools to help you get past a potentially emotional and vulnerable discussion. By the way, those three tools will work with just about any emotional and vulnerable conversation in your marriage, with your children, all those kinds of things. All right, taking it home. I'm kind of excited about this taking it home, mainly because I'm just a big nerd, but I really think this is a wonderful opportunity to take this over the summer and really personalize your walk. Here's what I like about it. It personalizes our walk with God in that it directly affects us and what we can do and what we can offer, but then it brings it back into community as we realize we do have something to offer to the bigger picture, both individually and in who and what, the things that we have, who we know. There are tremendous needs in our community. And the best of all, the icing on the cake, is if we can find this sweet spot where all these things come together and it's in an area of passion for people, that is a huge win for everybody. So in the Taking It Home, that's our main goal. We're looking for the spot where these four things come together. The capabilities are all about the individual. What is it that you bring to the fight? Are you gifted in certain areas? And it doesn't have to be natural talent, even. It can be something that they've gained experience in, something that they keep getting asked to do because they're just so good at it. Or it might be just natural talent. Any one of those things can define a capability. The resources are slightly different. Resources are more things. So maybe one of your great resources is money, or maybe one of your great resources are some of the networks that you have with other organizations who are able to help with needs in the community. All those kinds of things can be basically what can you marshal together to bring to help a need. When it comes time to discuss needs, we would like to focus in what we call the Huggins zone. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's just the school kids. It means anybody who's associated with Huggins, whether they're faculty, staff, administration, the kids themselves, or the families that the kids live with, or anybody who lives in the area of Huggins. It doesn't mean that we want to stop doing things in other parts of the city, or we're not going to stop go drilling water wells around the world. We're not going to stop that. But what we do want to do is try to concentrate our efforts in a fairly small area so that we have the greatest potential for long-term impact on that community. In other words, we want to stop doing drive-by service projects where we see people once and we say, God bless you, be good, and never see them again. We want to be a repeat performer in the community. We want to be seen frequently enough that people will begin to recognize us. Oh, you're that church that does stuff for the community. And in the process of that, begin to form relationships. And that relationship motive is what we're saying when we say we're going to transform this community one relationship at a time. That's how we do it, by focus and sustained coming back. So what sustains that and what keeps us coming back? That's where passion is so important. You can make yourself do things with sheer discipline, but I'll guarantee you, over a period of time, no matter how good you are, you will fall away from that. Sheer discipline takes a lot of will and willpower, and God bless all the people who have that, but it doesn't make you a joyful servant. It just makes you a dutiful servant. So if we can find a passion, that's what turns the servant part into the joyful part. So here's where we're looking for what they bring in terms of skills, what they bring in terms of resources and what they can connect to, where they see a need, and what they get fired up about, what they get excited about. Where all those things come together, that's the sweet spot we're looking for. So ask them to commit to put all this down on paper, to actually go through the work of making four columns or on a piece of paper, or even four pieces of paper if they want to go that route. And over the summer, ask them to commit to continuing to revisit that piece of paper regularly and pray and read scripture and listen to God and contemplate and meditate about those four things and record whatever they find. They can record it on paper, they can record it literally via voice, whatever they want. But if they don't record the little snippets of time that they think about these things, they miss the opportunity of seeing a big picture. Now, here's what I mean by that. Insights sometimes come in a trickle. They sometimes comes like a puzzle pieces. And you may have two puzzle pieces in May and four puzzle pieces in June and 10 puzzle pieces in July. But if you haven't written down those first two puzzle pieces back in May, by the time July comes around, you won't remember them. And your puzzle is going to be missing two pieces. I hope that makes sense. What I'm saying is, whatever insight you receive, write it down. And then you'll be amazed that when you look back over in the July or August time frame, how the summer has come together and God has begun to reveal some of your capabilities and resources and even needs. And you can actually put these four things together, find a sweet spot, and come back in the fall ready and charged up to do this wonderful thing called being a joyful servant of Jesus. And not only that, guiding people how to be one. So, taking it home, I'm really fired up about. I think that's a good way to end well and set up the summer for success. In fact, I'm going to make this Saturday's blog post about how to do this process, because I know that no matter how good people are, they may not remember this in a couple months, and they'll go back and go, well, what was that about? I can't remember. So I'm actually going to make a blog post and put it out there so people can refer back to it. So it'll be dated this Saturday, May 18th, and the title is going to be How Guided Reflection Improves Your Serve. So they can search for that on www.billhogan77.wordpress.com. And it will be there for eternity, or until the internet goes away, or Jesus comes. Not sure what happens first. All right. Wow, that was a lot of stuff, but hey, it's been a great session. So I want to end well, and I want to make sure that we set ourselves up for success this summer. Also want to say in closing, as we come to the end of our first year together, I just want to again thank you for your courage and your persistence. You've definitely made it a joy to be part of a team that's so devoted to connecting their faith to everyday life. I just can't tell you how amazed I am and how great it feels to be part of that kind of a team. I also want to encourage you and challenge a little bit. It's easy to look like, or it's easy to look at a question like, what's next for me in my faith life? What's next for WordServe? And think, man, haven't we done enough? I mean, we've been going at it hard. We're tired. We're worn out. But let me offer this encouragement and challenge. The encouragement is God has so much more in store for Fulshear and the surrounding community, I'm convinced. Now, I believe that the work that God started at WordServe will be carried through to completion, and it will be wonderful. I think we'll see a community that's transformed one relationship at a time. I think we'll make God's presence known. as we continue to do what we do. Now, if that sounds like that's too much for you, then good. You're going to think I'm a sick individual, but I'm glad that you think that that's too much, because that means that you're not going to try to do it yourself. You recognize you can't do it yourself. Listen, God-sized plans and visions are always overwhelming for humans. That's why he's God. That's why a God-sized vision is too much for any one person to handle. And it's also why it's so important to rely on God and not on ourselves. That you can't do this alone. So don't try. Stop being the Lone Ranger. Rest in God's strength. If everyone does their part, we can accomplish things that are worthy of a God-sized vision. So listen, thanks again. Keep up the great work that you've been doing, seriously. And most of all, be blessed so that you can be a blessing to others as God calls your name.